the second case for oral argument this morning is Discovery Bank Appellee versus Joseph Stanley, appellant. For the appellant, we have Mr. Casey Bridgman, an attorney from Lexington Springs, and for the appellee, Discovery Bank, we have Mr. Rob Martin, an attorney from Rapid City. Mr. Bridgman, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, counsel, and ladies and gentlemen, this case presents a unique set of facts regarding a case where a man got involved with a credit card company and the problems that resulted from that involvement with that credit card company. From 1997 until 2004, Joseph Stanley made payments on a credit card. He received billings every month. He made payments on that account, and he paid approximately $8,600 on this account. Those facts are uncontroverted. Discover Bank has not disagreed with that, the fact that he's paid that much on the account. A judgment was entered in this matter in January of 2008 for around $7,000, and that judgment was given by virtue of a motion for summary judgment, and the circuit court granted summary judgment to Discover Bank for that additional $7,000. So on this account, Joseph Stanley, if he pays that judgment, will be expected to pay around $15,000 on an account that he has never been told what the amount was for, who charged on that account, or when those accounts, when those charges were made. In 1997, Mr. Stanley received a billing of around $1,700 from Discover Bank. And based upon his affidavits and the facts that we do have in the record, he indicated that he thought someone had charged on that account. He thought that he was responsible for that bill. So what did he do? He made payments on that. He paid during this period of time from 1997 to 2004.
I'm just a little confused about your last comment. It seemed like you contradicted. It was a contradiction. You said he thought someone had charged on the account and that he thought he should pay the bill. So he thought somebody who was legitimately charging on his account or not?
He thought that someone had charged on that account, and the person, and I've asked him that several times, who that was, he thought his mother may have charged on that account. So he was not sure whether his mother charged on that account or whether someone else, some unauthorized person, charged on that account.
But he went ahead and paid the bill, or started, I mean, made installment payments on it as if it were legitimate.
He did.
All right. Thank you.
As far back as the Discover records go, were there any additional charges made?
No.
What?
No.
Okay.
And I'm sorry if I interrupted, Your Honor, but if I understand correctly, Joseph Stanley states that he never charged on his account. And as far back as the records go, which we have records back to 1998, he never charged a single thing on this account.
Nor did anybody else, apparently, because we would know that, right?
That's true. No one else charged on that account either. Everything from 1998 forward are over-limit fees, finance charges, things like that.
But he started to pay, and he paid for 7 years on an account that had some kind of a balance in excess of $1,000 way back in 1997.
That's correct.
And today he owes $8,000 with no additional charges by himself, whatever the balance is.
Pardon me, Your Honor.
Today, the judgment, the amount of the judgment, then it's well in excess of $1,000, correct? And that's just for fees and interest?
Correct. The judgment that was rendered in January of 2008 was for just over $7,000. The balance on the credit card was $6,500, and the rest were additional fees, finance charges, etc.
How did this get to, I mean, how did this case get resolved through a summary judgment? What did the trial court actually say was not in dispute? Because it sounds like you're saying there's dispute.
That's one of the reason for our appeal, and that's what we can't understand, Your Honor, either. there were many, many facts in dispute. First of all, the fact that Joseph Stanley said he never charged on this account. And secondly, if somebody did charge on this account, who was it? And those were things in discovery that Joseph Stanley tried to find out before I became involved, and then I tried to find out. The discoverer's explanation was that they don't keep records back that far, that they can't be expected to go back to 1997 and have records of who charged on this account, what it was for, and when the charge was made. And to answer the question, the circuit court, based upon the record that we've submitted, I believe decided this based upon the fact that Discover could not or should not be expected to go back that amount of time and find that out.
Well, is there some merit to that in a case where someone knows they or agrees to pay $1,700 and then proceeds over the course of 7 years to pay $8,600 to repay that and never say a word about it? Never say to the company, hey, what's going on here? I've paid $8,600 on a $1,700 bill. When are you going to stop this? I mean, going for 7 years seems a little bit ridiculous. And then to come back and ask the company without having done anything for 7 years, say, now I want you to go back and prove what happened 7 years ago.
And you're right in saying that that was ridiculous, and Joseph Stanley noted that on his affidavit, that it was crazy to have done this. And in 2004, he started questioning Discover Bank, started asking questions about why am I paying on this bill? Why has the bill never gone down? Why do I owe more now than when I started?
Does the record indicate whether when he makes his first inquiries, which you say is 2004, did Discover possess the records back to 1997, or were they already gone?
I don't know if the record reflects. I believe it was in March of 2004 when Mr. Stanley started making those inquiries. And from the beginning, Mr. Stanley asked for records regarding the 1997 supposed charge. And he asked for those from the beginning. And he was never given those.
From the beginning is 2004?
Correct.
But he had already paid for 7 years?
Correct.
Okay.
So in 2004, he made inquiries and was told that the records did not exist. I'm not sure if he was told the records did not exist, he was not given the records, and later we were told that they just didn't exist. The thing that I think we need to remember is that we're dealing with a motion for summary judgment. And one of the factors in regard to this case that makes it difficult to see why we're here and why we can even consider this case is because of our law that says when there's a motion for summary judgment, there has to be a statement of material facts as to which the moving party, Discover, contends that there is no genuine issue. And each material fact in this required statement must be presented in a separate numbered statement with appropriate citation to the record in the case. On appeal, well, first of all, at the motion for summary judgment at circuit court, we were never given that opportunity to see what the undisputed facts were and to challenge those because this required statement was not provided by Discover. The circuit court was asked about that, and the plaintiff, Discover's response was that you can tell just the basic issues that are involved in the case. And in the brief, the Discover says that this is just a sham claim, that we're just making a sham. We don't believe that it is a sham to require what the law requires, and that is that we have this required statement. If we had that, at least we could see on this appeal what the undisputed facts were,
Is that enough for us to reverse it just because there was not a statement of undisputed facts filed?
Yes, there is.
We have not done that before, have we?
I could not find any Supreme Court opinion where we had done that, where the Supreme Court had done that before.
But it's a pretty recent rule, though, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Justice.
This, putting a statement of undisputed facts is a pretty recent rule that we adopted here not too long ago.
It is fairly recent. I want to say within the last 2 or 3 years. And with that requirement, I mean, it makes the circuit court's job easier, it makes the Supreme Court's jobs easier, it makes my job easier, because without it, we're left to guess at what facts supposedly are in dispute or are not in dispute. So I believe that is a reason in itself to reverse this to the trial court for the discover to provide that statement, and then that requires the defendant, Joseph Stanley, to meet that in each separate numbered statement as to which facts they do dispute. So again, that alone, I think, is grounds for remand to the circuit court to comply with the law. This gets into the material facts, too. In any lawsuit, the plaintiff has the burden of proof, the burden to prove their case. And in this case, Discovery Bank was not required to prove any of its case. And I liken this to a case where we have a note. If a bank has a note and sues a person on that note, they have to bring in the initial document that says a person promises to pay money to the bank, the interest rate, when the date was that they promised to make that payment. In fact, I believe our practice is you have to bring in the original note to court to prove your case. That doesn't matter. It does not matter if a person has made payments on that note for 10 years or 20 years. It does not matter. You still have to prove on default that original debt, the original note, and prove that person was responsible for that debt. I liken that to this case, where Discover has to come in and prove that Joseph Stanley charged on this account, or someone that he authorized to charged on this account, when the charge was, and what it was for. Just like on the note, you have to prove that. Now, I believe it was a huge mistake for Joe Stanley to pay on this for 7 years. But that those payments are evidence, but they don't conclusively prove that he owed that amount. It could have been a mistake, and it was a mistake that he made payments during all of that time. So the other ground that appellant Joseph Stanley is asking for a reversal on this is because there are material facts at issue. The material facts are, did Joseph Stanley charge on this credit card? We dispute that. We say he did not charge. Did he authorize someone to charge on that account? There's a dispute on that. There's a question of whether his mother may have charged on that account, but there's a dispute on that fact.
Mr. Bridgman, I understand your argument about disputed facts, but at the same time, as I understand the record, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I know that your client wasn't represented by a lawyer at the time. I understand that to be the case. But he was served with requests for admissions and interrogatories and didn't answer them. And those requests for admissions would be, under our rules, would be deemed admitted by failing to answer them. Does that resolve the fact issue?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe it does resolve the fact issue. For one, Joseph Stanley did answer many of those matters, and those are in the record in his own handwriting, and I understand that he was representing himself, and so they weren't typed and they don't look nice, but he did answer certain of those questions that were posed to him by the admissions and the interrogatories. So I believe there is a record that he made and preserved that he denied those. And it's clear that he did deny those. And then when I became involved and found out that he had been served with these, I eventually answered those documents, and those are in the record as well. So I don't believe the fact that there were requests for admissions and Joe Stanley didn't technically answer those. He did answer those in his handwriting statements that were given to Mr. Martin.
Well, is there another material issue of fact on whether or not the credit card company decided to write off this bill and settle the case? Because you have attached to your reply brief a copy of a billing to your client where it says previous balance 6565, and then it says internal charge off, and it says his new balance is zero. So, I mean, was there a settlement here, and is that an issue of fact?
Yes, Justice Kolenkamp, that is an issue. I believe there are three grounds or issues for reversal of this matter. One is the missing required statement of material facts. The second is there are material facts in dispute, and Discover made it through summary judgment without having to prove a single issue. And third, I think this account was satisfied, and there is a material fact in dispute about whether or not it was satisfied. Joe Stanley, by affidavit, testified that he had contacted Discover Bank, tried to resolve this in 2004, and that they told him that this matter was satisfied. They would charge it off or write it off. Then, what confirms that is in December of 2004, and that's the exhibit you refer to, there's a statement that says that the $6,500 that was due at that time was charged off and the remaining balance was zero. So Joseph Stanley understood that he had gotten this matter resolved and that the amount was charged off and reduced to zero.
Did they send him that statement, or is that something you found in Discovery?
They sent him that statement. And that was brought before the circuit court. And again, we're on summary judgment, so we think that is a clear material fact that's in dispute. On summary judgment, the circuit court indicated that was just an internal charge-off, and that was not a settlement, that was not a court in satisfaction or any of those things. The circuit court indicated that was an internal charge-off. And our argument is that is a fact to decide. Maybe it was an internal charge-off, but certainly there are facts in dispute that indicate to Mr. Stanley that they satisfied his account and this was not an internal charge-off.
Well, it does say it says internal charge-off December 31st, but why would they send it to your client? And because it says new balance zero, and he has no payment. And there's no payment due. Why would they send it to your client? Do you know? What was the explanation for that?
I don't know.
In 2 minutes.
Thank you. I don't know, and Mr. Martin would have to answer that. But the fact that we're talking about here on appeal is that Joseph Stanley, by affidavit, said he talked to people at Discover. They told him this account was satisfied, and they follow it up with that statement saying it is written off. And so even if we want to go back to court and fight about whether that's an internal charge off and just something, an accounting thing, as the circuit court said, we need to do that in front of a jury and give us a chance to bring in our facts that say this was not an internal charge-off. Joseph Stanley was told that this amount was satisfied.
You understand that that's a procedure that companies use when they assign the debt to somebody to collect it for them?
I have dealt with many credit cards, and I understand that is a procedure that they use, an internal charge-off, and then they turn around and still sue the client.
Okay.
I'm saying that Joseph Stanley did not understand it that way.
You know, this may be out of order, but this seems like so you don't have to answer anything to this question or statement, but, you know, maybe we're dealing with $1,000 of real charges or something in the first place. Then we're dealing with $8,600 of payments. Now we have a summary judgment for $7,000. Has there been, and if this keeps going to the Supreme Court, there's going to be an additional charges of probably another $7,000 between you two lawyers handling this. Has there been strong efforts to try and settle this case in some way?
Yes, there have been attempts to settle this case. The offers that we have made just to be done with it have never approached the counter proposals that Discover gave us.
All right, thank you.
And your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bridgman. Mr. Martin, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Simply put, Mr. Stanley's appeal arguments don't fit the facts in this case, and I'll go through those for the court's edification. But I think the primary issue is the question of the statement of material facts that he thinks needs to be resolved. I think he's right in that it is an aid to the trial court, because if we look at the statutory section, SDCL 15-6-56C, those sections which are recent amendments to that statute, still are preliminary to the final paragraph or final statement, which says, the judgment sought shall be rendered forthwith if the pleadings, depositions, answers to interrogatories, and admissions on file, together with the affidavit, show that there's no genuine issue as to any material fact and that the moving party is entitled to judgment. I'll go through the documents that are in this case that support that.
And is there any reason why you didn't file statements of that you didn't feel were in dispute?
Well, Justice Meyer,
were you not aware of that rule or that regulation in this state?
I think if you look at the statement of facts in the motion or the statement of the case in the motion for summary judgment, we have the very facts that counsel is saying he did not know. And as a result, the trial court looked at that, and even though you had this statutory guidance, it said, I still find that on the totality of this, there's not a genuine issue of fact, and this thing can be disposed with, particularly under the circumstances of the evidence, and the fact that this is a debt case, it's an accounting case, and so it was clear to the trial court that there wasn't a need, or there wasn't any question in the trial court's mind that there was a genuine issue of material fact. If we look at Exhibit 1 in this case, we'll see that there's an application that was signed by Mr. Stanley back in March of 1997. That statement, in pertinent part, reads on the left-hand side. Again, this is Exhibit 1 that was in the motion for summary judgment. Yes, send me my pre-approved Discover card. I have read and agreed to the important information on the back. I agree that if I use my card or account, I will be subject to the terms and charges specified in the Discover Card member agreement, which will be sent to me. He signs that document, and there's a $2,000 credit limit. And if we look at Exhibit 4 in the record, we'll see that there's a specimen copy of that agreement. That agreement deals with just about every issue raised in this appeal. And if I may refer the court to Exhibit 4, first of all...
You know, let me just interrupt you. Wouldn't this have just made it very simple if you could have produced exactly who charged it to begin with? Then everybody would know and we wouldn't even be here. Why wasn't Discover able to provide that?
I agree, Justice Meyer Henry. The question was, it was brought to our attention not until 2005.
So what? Why can't you produce it?
We have 7 years or 6 to 7 years worth of records. It was raised in March of 2005. I told counsel I would try and produce the records that were available for my client, and I did that. We went back starting with June 19 of 1998. That's 7 years worth of records from 98 to 2005. But more importantly, Justice Meyer-Hanley, I think if we look at the card member agreement, because it's just like the trial court said, this is exactly why there's a card member agreement provision included in this so that we can prevent those very circumstances. If we look at the card member agreement on page 2, first of all, there's an acceptance of the agreement. The use of your account or a card by you or an authorized user, or your failure to cancel your account within 30 days after receiving a card means you accept the agreement. On page...
Let me interrupt you for a second. You know, all that's well and true, but he doesn't deny responsibility for what was charged. You're quoting sections of the agreement where he agrees to pay if he uses the card. He's not denying that. He's not disputing that he's obligated to pay for what was charged. He just wants to see proof.
Well, in fairness, Justice Inter, that's why the card member agreement set out in every monthly statement the card member writes. And if I can refer to that...
Well, before you do that, though, go back to Justice Mary Henry's question, because I don't think you ever answered it. Why you produced records back to 98. Why couldn't she produce them for 97?
Because at the time we got the request in March of 2005, it was longer than 7 years of our records. We had 67 years worth of records. So we didn't have records that went back to 96, 97.
So if this goes back, if it goes back to trial, you can't produce those records to prove up your debt because they don't exist.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there's a policy then that Discover Card has where they keep records for 7 years and then they have a destruction policy? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, they keep those records, Justin Plymouth Camp, by virtue of the state law in Delaware that provides that. And anything prior to that, they rely on the fact that they're giving a card member billing summary rights each and every month they send a statement. And they say, if I may refer to that particular section, they say specifically what the card member does. The billing rights summary states in pertinent part, first, see your card member agreement. Your card member agreement contains all the terms of your account. Then it gives, in summary, a billing rights summary. And if you read through that, it states, we must hear from you no later than 60 days after we send you the first bill on which the error or problem occurred. You can telephone us, but doing so will not preserve your rights. Each and every month from June of 1998 until May of 2004, Mr. Stanley received this type of monthly notice. He says in his affidavit in this case, I received the billings. The rights, I think, are even more important for the issues in this case because on the bottom of the billing rights summary, it states, you do not have to pay any amount in question while we are investigating, but you are still obligated to pay the parts of your bill that are not in question. Moreover, while we investigate your question, we cannot report you as delinquent or take any action to collect the amount you question. That puts the burden on Mr. Stanley for the very reason he now complains. I don't think I owe that. Well, this billing rights summary told him that. All you have to do is send us a written letter. If you telephone us, it's okay, but it will not preserve your rights. So the point is that Discover Bank is sitting back keeping 6 to 7 years worth of records and simply asking a individual card member, if they don't want to pay their bill, fine. Tell us, put it in writing, and it says, give us the name and account number. Give us the dollar amount of the suspected error. Describe the error and explain, if you can, why you believe there's an error. If you need more information, describe the item you are unsure about. That gives us a fair opportunity to meet any kind of objection to the billing. But I think it's also important, if I return to the card number agreement that addresses some of these particular arguments of counsel. On page 2, unauthorized use. He mentioned that maybe his mother used the card. If a card is lost or stolen, or if you think that someone is using your account or card without your permission, notify us immediately. You can notify us by calling telephone 800 number or by writing Discover Bank. You agree to assist us in determining the facts relating to any theft or possible unauthorized use of the card. There again, the card member agreement encourages the card member to have a remedy, to have a redress. Also on the card member agreement, if we turn to pages 4 and 6, it discusses the periodic finance charges. It discusses the over-the-limit fee. Remember I said the account was $2,000 pre-approved. So amounts over $2,000, as stated on the monthly statement, it nicked them for the over-the-limit fee, for the late fee, for finance charges. Those are all set forth in the card number agreement. Similarly, on page 7, cancellation. One of his complaints was, I tried to cancel the card. Cancellation, page 7. You may cancel your account by notifying us in writing or by telephone and returning or destroying every card and unused check that we have provided you. Of course, you will still be responsible to pay any amount you owe us according to the terms of the agreement.
Well, he claims that he tried to do that over the phone, and he was told because he hadn't had some credit counselor from your organization talking to him that that was not going to be done.
I respect that question. However, that's his statement. He doesn't give us the names of anyone he spoke to. He doesn't tell us when he did it. And if the court takes a minute to look at his affidavit in this case, you'll find that even though counsel argues that he was trying to close this account, the evidence in the trial court record is that as late as May and December of 2005, he wasn't trying to cancel the account, he was trying to bring it current. So if we look at the affidavit that he filed in this case, and that was attached to the plaintiff's brief. First of all, just to remind the court, on item 1, he acknowledges receiving all these billings from Discover. So there's no doubt, and if you look at the billings, they specify what the charge was for, what the payment was required, what the ongoing late charges, late fees, and finance charges would be. And again, the billing summary rights indicate or notify him all he had to do was to put it in writing, to dispute it, and they would give him the ability not to pay it, and they cooperate with him in the investigation. But he has these statements that he wrote to me that are attached to the affidavit of counsel, and the first one's dated May 17th of 05, and down in the mid part there, it says that numerous times I have called trying to settle and close accounts. Again, doesn't give us any information to go by, but the billing rights tell him what he could have simply done if he's frustrated by not having the opportunity to close the account. But he does say above there, from March 1697 to present, May 18th of 04, payments were made and brought current. He brought it current in his mind. It's not that he's trying to settle anything there. Next page, he also refers at the bottom where it says Walmart, medical leave, March such and such, still current. And then on the letter, which is Exhibit 2, page 1, dated December 1, 2005, in May, the account was brought current with the ID. And then also on page 2 of that exhibit shows the account paid and brought current. So as late as calendar year 2005, Mr. Stanley was trying to resolve this, to be sure, but he was making payments to bring it current. In fact, May 17, 2004, he made a $217 payment, which was one of 44 payments that he had made from 1997 to 2004. How is Discover Bank supposed to know when they set out specifically card member billing rights to be informed of any dispute? It's inconsistent to say, I don't owe the money, but I'll pay you 44 monthly payments over 7 years. Let me talk briefly about the $8,600. We dispute that. In my brief, I indicate it's closer to $6,100. But again, the $8,600 is determined in one of his letters. If we go back to his exhibit, he indicates on exhibit 1, page 1 of 2, from March 1697 to present, payments were made and brought current. And then below that it says March 97 to May 18, 7 years, 2 months, $100 a month. 86 months total, over $8,600. We have monthly billing statements for the 7 years. They don't show $100 a month payments. They show various payments. I've already mentioned the $217 payment made by in May of 08. He's just alleging these payments. We sent billing statements that show what we credit him for. He never challenged those, and as noted in discovery, he never gave us any discovery that says he made payments for which he wasn't given credit.
Let me ask you about the...
All I'm hearing you argue here are facts. So what I still am, since there is no statement of... since the statement has not been filed, it's difficult on a review to see exactly which facts are in dispute, because you are dispelling some of the facts that they've presented. So just for my benefit, if you take the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, which we have to do, why should this be summary judgment?
Because
not on your facts necessarily, but the facts in the light most favorable.
Because Mr. Stanley signed an agreement under which he knew he was going to be obligated on this account. He knew he would receive monthly statements. He knew the billing statement summary gave him recourse if he had any dispute. And so it was a burden on him, in fairness, as the trial court pointed out. It's not fair to Discover Bank to let someone get a card, make payments for 44 months, sit on their hands, and then say, oh, when you're going to bring forward in 2005 the remaining balance, now go back and try and provide records that are older than 7 years.
But that sounds more like a decision, an equitable decision or some fact-finding that the court might have done as to latches or waiver or whatever, which isn't appropriate for summary judgment.
Well, in the statement of the case, Justice Meyer-Henry, which I say is akin to a statement of material fact because of the recent change in the statute, I think if you look at the statement of case, every fact that was on point that is raised by counsel is addressed there. He signed the account, he agreed to pay it, he makes payments, he's got a remedy under the monthly billing statement to object and not be charged for anything he questions, nor could it be sued on, nor could it be reported to the credit bureau. And those are facts. He makes 44 payments. In his mind, he thinks he makes $8,600 worth of payments. Doesn't that beg the question of what he was doing and what he really knew? And if you look at the sequential monthly statements, they will go and by month show the balance and then show the increase each and every month as that occurs.
Before you get done, I'd like to ask about this December 31st, 05 charge-off, where it provides his previous balance is $6,500. Then it says he gets a credit payment of $6,500, new balance zero. He says that's a settlement. He said he talked to people and they made a settlement, and here's this statement they send to him showing zero balance. Why is that not an issue of fact for the court?
I think Justice Schoenecamp, it's not an issue of fact because, again, he said in May of 2005 he was simply bringing the account current. He didn't make any payments after May of 2005. This happens in December of 2005 when in the interim, June, July, August, September, and October, monthly statements again are sent to him and notifying him of the balance. And simply because the December balance was an internal charge-off, meaning it went from short-term debt for the client to long-term debt for the client, that still raised the notice to him that it was going to be due. There's no written agreement as required by an accord and satisfaction that shows we accepted anything from him. So he was clearly on notice, and as we go forward in 2005 for the first time, he now wants to have charges from 1997. Contrary to the agreement he signed in March of 97, contrary to about 84 months of billing statements he received, contrary to 44 months of payments he made, and contrary to everything that any reasonable person would expect, because under credit cards, we have rules. Those rules work for both parties. Discover Bank has done everything possible to try and make this reasonably opportunity for him to challenge, not get charged, and allow this dispute to go forward in a way where they could provide records. His failure to do so is nobody's fault but his, and it really creates a prejudice to Discover Bank, who did everything he asked. Every time he used the card, even if he didn't want to use it, it was available. Because he was making payments.
Your time has expired. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Mr. Bridgman, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you. To kind of deal with the last matter first that Mr. Martin dealt with, there were no payments made by Joseph Stanley after that settlement. Those references to in 2005 in the exhibits to becoming current were all matters that he had been dealing with before, 04, trying to be current and becoming current. He didn't make any payments in 05 and say, okay, am I current again? No, because in those statements it says right in there, you've reduced my account balance to zero. So he was not coming current after Discover had reduced this to zero. Also regarding the current, Joseph Stanley is getting these billings every month. I mean, he's getting over-limit fees and finance charges and late fees, and it affects his credit. And yes, he does want to become current, but he also at the same time is saying, I don't think I owe this. How come you won't send me the statements showing that I owe this money? I've been paying on this long, and you've never provided me anything that shows that that's my bill or my account. Mr. Martin talks about in fairness to Mr. Stanley, Discover Bank should have to prove this, and they should not be able to rely upon some ambiguous language that says if you don't dispute the bill in 60 days, you give up all your rights. There's no law, no case, no precedent, no contract law that says if he did not give notice that he disputed the bill, that all of a sudden he admits to everything that's on that bill. And I think that's fatal to Discover's case. That 60-day notice just is a way to get the company to look at errors and omissions and the fact that maybe there's a dispute over billing. It doesn't say if you don't complain, you admit everything that's gone on in the past. Further, Joseph Stanley did eventually complain. He did eventually complain, and that set the process in motion. So if we're dealing with $6,500 in credit card debt, it is required of Discover Bank to bring forth evidence to him to show that he is responsible for that debt. And if they...
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, with all the credit card finance problems that we're having in today's society, doesn't the credit card holder have some obligation here pursuant to the agreement or whatever that to, if you really dispute it, not to keep paying it, or if you pay it at the same time dispute it as you're paying it? I mean, there's got to be some standard that he's held to as well. You can't just sit on it for 7 years and then decide, well, I mean, I can't remember what I charged last month while I owned 7 years ago. And chances are this probably is somebody he authorized. That's what he thought. Doesn't there have to be some obligation on his part as well? I mean, this is a commercial transaction. They're loaning the money and the use of that credit card. So what is the holder of the credit card obligated to do?
I think the holder of the credit card is required to notify Discover Bank and tell them, I don't owe the money. And that's...
But what period of time? I mean, can you sit on it too long and then it's too late?
We're saying that there is no time limit. I mean, this isn't a case where Joe Stanley is going to Discover and saying, I want my $8,600 back. That was a mistake that I paid you. I want all that money back. What Joe Stanley is going to Discover is saying, I don't think I owe any of this money. Tell me why I'm supposed to pay this money. And that sets in motion, so he has done his duty there. He's done his duty and notified the credit card company that he's disputing that. Then it's up to the credit card company to bring forth evidence that he owes that. And the credit card company, they have to deal with the statute of limitations and proof in the matter of this. They are required to bring forth this evidence. If they're throwing away records, that's not Joe Stanley's fault, and it's not his fault that Discover threw away those records. He didn't wait 7 years and pay $8,600 just so he'd get beyond 7 years and they'd throw away the records. So to answer your question, Justice Meyer Henry, I think Joe Stanley had a duty to go to the credit card company and dispute the bill, and that's exactly what he did. And when he disputed it, it put the credit card company on a duty to prove he owed that money. And they couldn't do it. Just a couple other issues. Again, Mr. Martin talks about the cardholder agreement that says, if I use your account, I will pay. And what he is saying is, if I use that account, I will pay. I have been paying on this. Where is your proof that I used this account to purchase a certain item or used it to buy gasoline or whatever? And again, when we go back to the basics of a lawsuit and the burden of proof being on the plaintiff, they have not met their burden of proof. Also, in regard to some questions for Mr. Martin, yes, and this is in my brief, but in a summary judgment, all facts and inferences from those facts are to be determined in light of fairness and in favor of the non-moving party, Joe Stanley. So if we take this case and take Joe Stanley saying, I didn't charge anything on this account, somebody maybe did. I want to find out who did, so tell me who charged on that account, and I'll see if that person was an authorized user. When was this amount charged? What was the amount? All of those things relate to the fact that there is many, many disputes of material facts, and this is not appropriate for summary judgment. And if there's no further questions, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bridgen. Court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.